Welcome to this episode of the Satellite World Briefing Podcast. I'm your host, Lucas Hunsaker. In this special episode, we're switching things up. Jerry Collins, Director of Product Management at Intelsat, joins us not as a guest, but as a special co-host. Jerry takes the mic to lead a conversation with Dan Dooley, CCO of Link Global. Link builds, launches, and operates cell tower and space satellites that provide direct-to-device connectivity through its mobile network operator partners. Intelsat recently announced an investment in Link and sees opportunities to bring the technology to customers worldwide. With their shared vision of expanding global connectivity and redefining how we can connect and communicate anywhere on the planet, you're in for an insightful and engaging conversation. Before I hand it off to Jerry, I did want to inform you all that this episode is a little choppy in regards to audio at the start of the conversation, but rest assured it does clear up as the episode goes on. Thank you so much for sticking with us, and we hope you enjoy this conversation.
Okay, thanks, Lucas. I've got a new friend on the podcast this week. You may have heard in the last 2 months, Intelsat made an investment in a company called Link Global. Link Global, a very interesting technology and a very interesting segment of the market. And I'm delighted to have with me Dan Dooley, who is the Chief Commercial Officer of Link Global. Dan, before I head into a whole load of questions, Dan, do you want to just give us tell us a little bit about yourself and your role?
Yeah, sure. And I think I've never been introduced as a new friend since I've been around for a long, long time. So for the last few decades, grew up in the mobile network operator space. And so that's kind of culminated in the last 4 years. I've been the Chief Commercial Officer of a company called Link Global. And we build cell towers in space, and we partner with mobile network operators and governments to be able to use their spectrum to be able to connect to our cell towers in space and provide, you know, connectivity to where generally there is no connectivity today, or where terrestrial connectivity is not, you know, is not available.
So Dan, yes, that actually can hit one of my first questions, which was going to be, well, what's the mission? But maybe just a little bit more on the mission and just kind of, you know, what's the innovative technology in space that makes this work? It sounds very exciting, and obviously there's good reason why we invested. But a little bit more about that mission and the technology that lies behind it.
Yeah, it's somewhat magical, to be open with you, is that, you know, if you think about the Link started in 2017 with a theory that you could actually connect a small satellite moving, you know, 8 kilometers, you know, an hour, a second, and 500 kilometers above the Earth, and connect it to the device in your pocket without making any change to the device in your pocket. And people thought that was a crazy, you know, idea. And so we have a really brilliant chief technology officer who patented and figured out, well, you know what, it is possible. When you run the numbers, it's possible to connect it and have the little device in your pocket work to the satellite. But the key of it is that it's got to work seamlessly. It can't work with some over-the-top app, or it can't work with some sleeve, or can't work with some other antenna, or can't work with a specialized device. If you are truly going to connect the unconnected, and the 5.5 billion people that are out there, and the billion people that want connectivity that just can't get connectivity because of there's no cellular service, you really needed to make it backward compatible. You needed to make every single device on Earth work seamlessly with a satellite in orbit. And so that was a pretty crazy concept back in 2017. And over time, I think people have now realized that, you know, which was interesting, Jerry, is the first couple years of me doing this was always trying to convince mobile network operators that it was technically possible. It was always, it's not possible. The Link budgets don't close. You need a special antenna. You know, you'll need a bigger satellite. You can't do it. And, you know, now, obviously, it's how fast can you get it to me? And eventually, how far can this really go? Can this go to replace terrestrial connectivity, or is this a backup solution and other things? So the conversation with MNOs have really changed over the last 4 years. But it, a principle at the heart of what Link is that we are, you know, a builder of cell towers in space that allow MNOs and governments to connect spectrum and provide to their existing subscribers the ability to have connectivity in places that they never had connectivity in the past.
Well, then hopefully they don't call you crazy anymore. And I'm really keen to understand, you know, in terms of how you've actually tested that out on the ground. But I'm also maybe just my first question is, because we do see other companies with a similar kind of proposition. I'd be interested to understand, where do you think the Link Global solution differentiates itself against some of the other, let's say, offerings in the same market segment at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, you know, generally, this is the hottest area, not only in satellite, but also, you know, one of the hottest areas in satellite, but also one of the hottest areas from an M&O point of view. So I'll go back to my M&O background. You know, we spent years and years building, you know, cell towers in geographic locations and spreading out the capacity and making sure that we have connectivity everywhere. And it just got to the point where several years ago, where there was just no financial need to or ability to put more cell towers in remote areas. It didn't make economical sense. There wasn't enough people. The payback wasn't enough. And so people stopped building terrestrial towers. And now you have, you know, arguably a lot of the world is not covered by terrestrial towers. And so therefore that allowed, you know, Link to step in and have this innovative technology to do that.
From an Intelsat perspective, you know, one of our key principles is that, you know, only by combining, you know, non-terrestrial, i.e. satellite, together with terrestrial, can you reach the goals of kind of, you know, ubiquitous and global connectivity. You know, we've looked at very many different ways of doing that. And, you know, we have a very strong, you know, cell tower connectivity business, where cell towers, which are really beyond the terrestrial network reach, we're able to connect, and we connect, you know, about 15 or 16,000 towers globally. But it's like as though this is kind of the next step beyond to fulfill that mission. And I guess that's why we're kind of interested. And when you look at the end user, and I'm really keen to understand, you know, what tests you've done in the field. What is that like to use this service? What is it like to use for the end user out in the field, out in those kind of remote locations, which are previously completely unserved?
Yeah, it's unspectacularly spectacular. When I say that, it's that, you know, I'll give you a recent example. Is last month, we were in a really remote area in South Africa, on the plains in the middle of nowhere, and there was just no terrestrial connectivity. And, you know, we were able to put a cell site down from one of our Link towers and connect, you know, with our partner MTN and connect their spectrum, their SIM cards, their devices, and make a phone call. And you would think the phone call was, you didn't know it was through space. So it was unspectacular in the fact that you're sending messages, you're seeing mass notifications, you're having a conversation on a mobile phone like you do today. You dial a number, you have a phone call. It's no different. And you're like, okay, well, what's special about this? What's special about this is that you're actually connecting it 500 kilometers up to something that's traveling 8 kilometers a second. And, you know, the user experience on the ground, you don't really know about it. And that's really kind of cool about it.
And I think, you know, it's something I've kind of learned over the, you know, the number of years, particularly working with the MNOs. If you want to really demonstrate to them the way in which terrestrial and non-terrestrial can work together, make it really easy for them to use. You know, traditionally in the satellite industry, we've been very good at selling megahertz and selling parts of a satellite, which ultimately, unless you're a specialist, are quite difficult to use. That it sounds as though you've actually gone to almost the extreme, which is, okay, give us your devices. We'll connect them directly without you actually having to do anything, which ultimately, I guess, kind of completes the whole kind of idea that, you know, if you make it easy for the end user to use, you've actually gone a hell of a long way to solve the problem. Dan, I'm really interested to hear you talking about voice, because for me, I guess my initial understanding was, yes, you can do text messaging. In terms of the range of services you would expect the Link Global Network to deliver on, What's your view? Can you go beyond text messaging? How much voice? Is there an evolution beyond that? Really interested to get your view.
Yeah, sure. I mean, a couple points. One, back to the ease of use, you're right. When an MNO sees it and they ask about what equipment do I need to bring, what antennas do I need to bring, and we say, no, just bring your phone and, you know, and show up at the right time, because it's got, you know, the overpass is 4 minutes long, so show up at the right time and we'll be able to connect it. There's no really nothing on the ground that you need to do. So, you know, that's really key. Generally, the services, the goal, I'll start with the endpoint. The endpoint is that no matter where you are in the world, you are able to turn your mobile phone or your device on and have it work, and have it work just like you're in downtown London or Washington, D.C. That's the end goal. How far we get to that, it's really going to be interesting, right? I think satellites can be a great supplemental coverage from space. You're going to start with basic services like messaging, light data, right? IoT devices. We'll get in. I know we'll get into some of the verticals later, but IoT devices. You'll start with that periodic, you know, or you know, persistent communications around, you know, smaller bandwidth. Once you have more and more and more satellites in the air, then you'll be able to increase the capacity to be able to then get to where you're getting to, which is eventually full service, where I turn my phone on in the middle of South Africa and I don't know whether I'm on MTN's terrestrial, MTN's satellite network brought to you by, you know, by Link. I don't know if I'm on MTN's terrestrial network with a backhaul from, you know, from Intelsat, right? Like I don't really care. I'm in South Africa. I'm using my phone like I do, you know, in Johannesburg, but yet I'm in the middle of nowhere. That, Jerry, that's where the great debate really is going to be, is how far can you get? Not will you get there. It's really how far, because it's, you know, I grew up in the mobile network operator world. It depends on how much spectrum you have, how many users, how many cell sites can you put into it? How do you densify it, right? Because as all of us know who go to like a sporting event, you know, when it's overcrowded with amount of people, no matter how much cell towers you have and spectrum you have, you know, you're going to have, you know, connectivity issues. But it really, you know, what we're starting with, Jerry, it's called supplemental coverage from space, right? So I'll pick on Canada. It's a great one to pick on. You know, in Canada, one of our great partners, Rogers, has phenomenal connectivity kind of north of the U.S. border for the first 200, you know, miles or 300 miles. But then above that, you know, it's just not economical to have cell towers, but they have the ability to, you know, to provide the spectrum there. And so, you know, what our vision is that we would cover that northern part, you know, supplementary from space, and have that be complementary to what they're doing on the terrestrial side. And it's a better use of their, you know, assets. We mobile network operators spent a lot of money on spectrum. We spent billions of dollars on buying this spectrum, and it's a much more efficient use of that spectrum to be able to do that. So I think you're going to start with a lighter data services, but you'll get into that sort of broadband. And I'll put that in quotes because that's a term that not everybody knows. I mean, people want to stream videos. Eventually, it will get there. It depends on will it get there for a few people in the middle of nowhere, or will it get there in the suburbia where you need coverage, or will it get there in micro holes. That's where this partnership with Intelsat really is exciting for us, because what we're building at Link is we're building, you know, with you all, is a multi-orbit strategy, right? The ability to go from LEO to MEO to GEO and have ground stations and have the user always connected to the ground. But we're also building a multi-spectrum satellite, right? The ability to use existing terrestrial spectrum today for devices that's in your pocket, and future MSS spectrum when the devices are in, based on release 17, 18, 19, and people get that in. So we're future-proofing the fleet. This is a pretty expensive, obviously, proposition to build a network of cell towers in space. And so to be able to have that, you know, satellite be capable of not only supporting, you know, today's use cases around the 5.5 billion devices can work today on terrestrial spectrum, but then the future, you know, IoT, the future devices will all be done on, you know, on MSS spectrum, which frankly, there's more of. You have smaller beams, you can put more capacity. And that's where, Jerry, that's where it's going to be really interesting to see, is how far will this get to where you know, supplemental coverage from space and terrestrial coverage meet. They're never going to replace each other, but they're going to have some logical meeting point in the middle where, okay, it's just real economical. I'll give you a great example. Like in sprints, we put a tower in the back bowl of Vail. So if you're skiing, if you're lucky enough to go skiing in Vail, which is a wonderful spot, Colorado, you're in the back bowl of Vail, you're going to have, and you're a T-Mobile customer or T-Mobile roamer, you're going to have phenomenal coverage because at Sprint, we built the tower there because our chairman had a house and liked to helicopter ski. So we have a tower there. There's no reason to have a tower there. There's not any reason to have a tower there. There's at any point less than 100 people skiing. Not everyone's using their phone, right? But you want to have connectivity. That's better covered from space. And you've got hundreds of these examples where mobile network operators have put cell towers in places that are just not economical, but they did it for a reason. So the real fundamental question, and again, it comes to where we started with, is it's no longer if this is going to work. It's how far is this going to be able to go? Will it get to where we can use this in suburban areas, or is this going to be a rural, you know, lower population kind of solution?
It's really interesting. It's also interesting the way in which, you know, I've had a similar career path to yourself, a long time in the cellular world, and then kind of transitioning over to the satellite world. And when I listen to Link Global and I try to understand what you're doing, is I often kind of think back when we started with 2G, well, we had a small amount of spectrum and we had a very limited number of services. Then we got our hands on a bit more spectrum and we could do more services for more people. And over the years, we've been able to get more spectrum into terrestrial cellular. And that's allowed us to support more users and support more applications. And I think this is the way it's going to go. It'll be different, of course, but it's a similar trajectory. And I don't know if you've listened into some of our previous podcasts with our friends at Satellite World, but together with my friend Kent Akagi, we did talk quite a bit about how bringing the Ku band, ultimately a large amount of spectrum, north of 10 gigahertz, when that comes in, we've got a lot of spectrum available and potentially the opportunity to have a very wide range number of services. Anyway, that's a little bit more kind of my view. Dan, we want to use your time wisely. So Dan, really interesting, you know, this is Satellite World, so we love our satellites. We like talking about what's in space. How much can you share with us exactly what will Link Global put in space? What do you think your orbit will be? How many satellites will you launch with? I know you've got a couple of satellites up there already. Any details of what exactly will be in space, I think, will be very interesting to our listeners.
Yeah, so Link, in 2017, determined that the best way to have supplemental coverage from space direct to a device is essentially to use a regenerative payload, right? To put the intelligence on the bird, okay? And so that is the main, you know, difference between us and some of the competitors, is that we have the intelligence is on the satellite. So the satellite is a base station in the sky. It's a cell tower in space. And so that allows for, you know, MNOs to connect their spectrum to a cell tower in space. And it looks like a roaming interconnection for the MNO. So what it looks like is, if you guys are, you know, into the roaming, is your phone has a preferred roaming list on it. So when I come to the UK and I land at Heathrow, I turn my phone on, and by the time the plane stops, I have connectivity, I have a welcome SMS, I might have an offer that's put to me like, hey, buy an extra package or something. All that happens by the time I land. Well, there was a lot of roaming integration that needed to be done for that to happen, so that a foreign device and a foreign network could connect to the carrier that my carrier, T-Mobile, wanted to use. And when you do that, and you when the satellite network looks like another roaming vendor, all of a sudden the phone now works out of the box, and it's very seamless to the user, and it's very seamless for the mobile network operator. And so that's really the key, is to be able to have that. So having that regenerative payload, having that ability to be a roamer to it, allows MNOs to not have to have infrastructure on the ground. And, you know, what we're doing with the multi-orbit is also allowing us to use our partners, MEO and GEO satellites, to be able to have those existing ground stations where we don't have to put all that ground infrastructure. And so we can offer people without any any change to their network, any change to their mobile devices, any change to their subscribers. You know, they do an over-the-air update to add the Link PLM ID to their phone, and their users will have access to it. And they have the policy control that they do today with roamers. They're able to say, hey, you know, this is Jerry. He's a good postpaid customer. I'm going to give him the ability to have the satellite connectivity. But Dan, he's prepaid. He hasn't paid his bill. So when he tries to connect to the satellite, I'm not going to let him connect to the satellite, right? All of that stuff. So it looks to you know, where you were going earlier, to a mobile network operator, it looks exactly like the service they have today. And that's what's most appealing to them, is the fact that they can integrate it so easily. And it's just frankly a matter of having more satellites in the air.
It's fascinating. There are kind of two things, I think, which kind of fascinate us in Intelsat. And it's a really interesting evolution. Yeah, this idea of regenerative payloads, and particularly when you're looking at that real integration between cellular, terrestrial, and satellite, when you start putting some of the cellular base station functions into the satellite, that's probably about as closely integrated as you can get. And then obviously also the idea of using inter-satellite links, mm-hmm. to leverage you know, the kind of multi-orbit networks of your partners is really interesting as well. And I guess that's probably a key part of your business model as well, is that, you know, pretty reduces the amount of investment you need to make on the ground if you can use the inter-satellite links, which is, again, one of the key benefits of doing that. So, yeah, they're two fascinating points. Just as a last question, just interested in kind of the use cases. You know, the satellite industry, you know, always very strong at focusing on some really key verticals. Outside of, let's say, consumer mobile coverage, where does Link Global see its technology having a big role to play in particular verticals?
So the largest part of our vertical is in IoT. You know, billions of devices being made, billions of devices are in infrastructure on the ground. So what's nice about the solution that Link has built is that it is backward compatible to any IoT device. If it's a 2G chipset in it, it's backward compatible. So I'll give you another good example of where we're going with this, is that we're the only satellite provider who's also supporting 2G. And you may be like, well, why are you supporting 2G? You know, 4G, 5G, 6G is where it is. Well, you know, there's quite a bit of the world, as you know, Jerry, in Africa that is 2G, going to be 2G for a while. But there's also a place in the world, like the United States, like Canada, where there are 2G devices that are not coming to get a 4G chipset in them that have lost connectivity. I will give you a personal example. My wife's car, which is an older car, and I was trying to keep her on an older car, lost its OnStar connectivity because, quote, AT&T shut down the 2G network. Well, that you don't need to happen. That can be handled by space. And so one of the cool use cases is that, as like, again, I'll talk about Rogers. As Rogers is shutting down the 2G network, in order for them to shut down the 2G network faster and repurpose all of that spectrum to 5G and some higher bandwidth capability, you can use a small sliver of 2G spectrum and have us reconnect. In their case, there's a million John Deere tractors in Alberta. Like, you're not going to bring those tractors in to get a 4G chipset in them. You're not going to, you know, they're not going to get a new tractor because these tractors last a long, long time. So in order for that long tail of 2G, so it really does, you know, one of three things, right? It allows the MNO to repurpose their spectrum and kill older generations of technology. When I was at Sprint, we shut down the frame relay and the X.25. These are old. That's how old I am. But it took us forever, is my point, because there was always somebody who needed to stay on it because they had devices. This allows them to do that faster. This allows also the user to continue to have that connectivity, and it allows the people to continue to sell that connectivity to that user. And so, you know, that's just a way that we can help in this maturation between 2G, 4G, 5G. As you said, the goal is to get, you know, connectivity to everybody just like you have it today. But there's also a journey that we're on with the mobile network operators that allow the mobile network operators to more effectively use the spectrum that they paid really good money for, to be able to use that in a much more efficient way and to it's really part of the fabric of their network planning to allow them to say, okay, I'm going to put supplemental coverage here on this technology, not here. I'm going to use terrestrial spectrum here. I'm going to use MSS spectrum here. There's lots of different ways to do it. And, you know, Link is uniquely qualified because we're building the satellites to have that multi-spectrum, multi-orbit, multi-beam connectivity that allows it to be very flexible so that we can, again, live in the world of today with the devices that are today, but also thrive in the world when we get to NTN.
So, Dan, I can definitely see a scenario where we're going to meet up in a bar and we're going to talk about 2G use cases and how we're going to connect all those things. And we're going to make a great business and keep a lot of people very happy. Because as you say, not, maybe people don't know that, but there is an awful lot of 2G technology out there, which we really want to keep supporting for a long time. And as a starting
and
point,
and they're great stories, Jerry. To be honest with you, they're great. Well,
they do great things.
And water, like you know, people getting their water in Ghana at the water station now, and they can tap their 2G phone and get their liter of water. Like I can go on. There's fishing in Palau and people crossing borders. I mean, it's an amazing use case.
The biggest way to transform anyone's life is to give them a 2G phone from 0G. Everything else which comes with 3G, 4G, 5G is an incremental improvement. The biggest transformation to a thing or a person is when you connect on 2G. That's when the real transformation happens. Everything else after that is incremental. It's good, but it's never quite the same significant impact. Anyway, let me
digress, tell you a story, little story. Okay, story is that one of our first mobile network operators, PNCC in Palau, had a really remote island, 6-hour boat ride from the main island. Like it's a boat trip. It's a day boat trip. It goes once a day up and back. They send their kids. There's like 30 people on this island. They send their kids to the mainland to go to school. And they had no connectivity, to your point. They had no 0G, no connectivity. So the PNCC said, well, let's put a cell site there. And yeah, they can only make a few minutes of connectivity a day, but we'll tell them when the connectivity is. And it's clunky, but let's just see how it works. They can opt into it and we'll see what it works. Well, it worked really, really well to the fact that I was at a meeting, you know, a few months ago with the president of PNCC, who's the telecommunications, the MNO there. And he was like hitting me. And I'm like, what are you hitting me? Is the service not working? He's like, no, it's working really well, but people are calling me now wanting to surf, you know, Netflix. To your point. So like, yeah, we gave them the ability to do basic 2G connectivity.
And now they want more.
And they want them a hell of a lot more, which just to put a bow in it, which is why we're really excited about, you know, the partnerships we have with Intelsat, because there is a journey. There's a future that says that you're going to want to use other, you know, MSS spectrum to be able to have more spectrum, smaller beams, more capacity that allows newer devices to connect. That eventually will be the way that people like in that small island of Palau get everything they want to get.
And I think that's, you know, that's a really good way to kind of maybe kind of draw a close here, is that it is a journey. It's a journey we're going to start off talking about 2G, but over time, the service model is going to evolve, and the portfolio of services you're going to support is going to increase. So I know from an Intelsat perspective, we're very excited to go on that journey. So Dan, thank you very much for spending some time with us today and sharing your thoughts about direct-to-device.
Thank you, Jerry and Dan, for joining us today, and a big thank you to our listeners for tuning in as well. This was the Satellite World Briefing Podcast. To stay up to date on all the latest episodes, you can subscribe to our channel and follow us on LinkedIn. From GEO to LEO, MEO to you, transmitting today's out-of-the-world satellite news. Tune in next time for more celestial stories.